a rich man's world. I have turned the soul of this beautiful land, but the beauty a rich man's world.
Week was honestly pretty rough. It was really, really rough.
Heartbreaks, you mean?
Heartbreaks. I felt deeply, deeply down because of my beloved Lakers. I cannot believe that they got scraped so badly. They got swept. So we're recording this on Saturday. Earlier this week on Monday was when they got eliminated from the playoffs. And I mean, I knew that they were going to lose because they went down 3-0 and the Nuggets just looked so good. But this was like such a crazy ride. I mean, you've been watching me watch them this season. Did you share my sadness? Did you share?
Absolutely not. And that's why I'm not a sports fan.
So like, I don't understand how you can watch such inspirational play and then such tragedy and not feel so down.
I don't know what inspirational plays are, but it's just funny because I watch a lot of reality TV shows like Kardashians. There's even a show called WAGS, which is Wives and Girlfriends of Sports Stars or something like that. So I feel like because I watch those shows and because there's like famous basketball players or football players in it, that's the only way I know certain players. I'm like, oh, that person dated like this Kardashian. Like that person is this person's baby daddy, whatever. But I feel like they need to make a show about wives and girlfriends of sports fans because, you know, I was on a texting chain with other people in our friend group and it's just hilarious, like passing like photos, like you guys don't even know we're taking photos of you guys. And it's just like hands overhead, like shaking your head, yelling at the TV, breaking a TV, you know, for certain people. It was just like hilarious.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like whenever I see your guys' text chain, there's so many of those photos with us just like on the couch, just like our face in our hands. And it's funny about the reality TV like overlap. I feel like when you watch the Lakers, aside from LeBron, aside from AD and our
unibrow boy.
Yeah, yep, the brow and our boy Austin Reeves. Mm-hmm. The one guy that you recognize every single time is
Tristan Thompson.
Oh, and why?
Get him out of here. I mean, all of America, at least the I can't even say female population, but
yes.
People who watch Kardashians, you know, they know the drums and, you know.
Tristan has a special place in there. They're shit list.
He just needs to sit his ass down.
I mean, you know, he gave us good minutes. He looked really good. But yeah, it's just, it's a stupid hobby to be such a big fan. I mean, like, I spend so much of my time on Reddit, on Twitter, YouTube, watching talking heads talk about, you know, my team. And then it just riles me up. And then I see like fans on like subreddits just kind of going crazy. And I feel like this hobby just like works to rile us up. That's just like the business. And then once, you know, your team is out, because there's only one team that wins. So 29 other teams are going to be either depressed early or, you know, like us, get very close and then just like have their weeks destroyed. It's just a waste of my energy. But,
God,
you know, I'm going to get back into it.
Yikes. When the Jets come on.
Oh, man.
Again, that's another roller coaster.
Yeah, but
couple wins in the beginning of the season. And I'm sorry, Jets fans, but like.
But we got your boy. We got your boy.
Who's my boy?
You know, alumni of Cal Rogers. Bears. Yes, sir.
Man, every time you bring up a sports team, like there's like multiple index cards is going in my head. I'm like, which one is it? Which one is it?
I see you trying to like associate it with like the people that you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right. I had this kind of thing that happened last night. I remember, you know, you kind of came into our office room to see me, but I was super excited because it was Friday night. We got our long weekend coming up. Most people signed off work pretty early. So, you know, I had like a nice open runway. And we have this really dope taco joint that sits across the street from our place. And it's so good because they make their taco tortillas on the spots. So fire. And so I had my taco plate, I had my burrito ready, I had my salsas, I was ready to go to town, pull up some shows, and then I got paged. And for people who work in tech or people who know programmers, there's this whole concept. It's really, really weird when you take a step back from it, but you're expected to be on call all the time, like at least once, maybe a month, once every, you know, maybe 2 months. There's like a rotation of engineers that need to be on call all the time. And we even have this app that will call us when people page us. And it's really dumb, right? Because like even calling it paging or being on call kind of like indicates that we're on the level of like doctors, like we're saving lives. It's like mission critical for us to get out of bed and answer something. I know you know my paging ringtone because it's woken us up.
I'm like smirking because I feel like if I were an engineer, I would sleep through the alarms like all the time. Like even when you get paged in the middle of the night, you'll tell me the next morning, like, oh my God, I had to wake up at like 2 a.m. and there was like some incident. I'm like, what? Like I was dead asleep. But it's also really funny to see you like out and about. And when you hear that ringtone happening, you're like, oh! Like you get into like this frantic mode because you associate it with getting paged.
Yep.
It's like PTSD for Eng.
Yeah, I got a little trauma from it. Yeah, it's so silly. You know, like I had to like hop on. It was Friday at like 6 p.m. and we were just looking at a bunch of charts. And, you know, I had some teammates on the East Coast that had to log on. So it was like close to, you know, 10, 11 p.m. for them. And it's just a funny little thing that really just kind of, it just like made my energy really dive bomb because like I was so amped up on adrenaline when you get the page. And then you're going to basically do like investigations, and computers are just like, they're just dumb things that, you know, behave in weird ways. And like, we have to just try to understand it. And we were able to solve it. But then afterwards, I just felt so tired. And even this morning, I just felt like my energy was like so low. And I think there's something around that cycle for me at work where you get, you know, you have this like sense of urgency around either like a task or getting paged, this like dumb construct that we've all sort of accepted as professional devs that we have to do. And one of the things that it makes me think a lot about is how we just kind of accept these like work constructs, these like work practices. Like we don't even question them. You know, as like a developer, I never questioned whether or not I was going to be on call. And not that you have any, you know, work capital to say like, I'm not going to do this because you want to keep your job. But I think that's kind of where the rubber meets the road is like, if you want to keep your job, you do what they say.
Follow the rules.
Yeah, exactly. No matter how absurd it is. And so I guess it made me think a lot about burning out. You know, we started this podcast because that's kind of a top of mind thing for us. Even the name of Off the Grind, it's supposed to convey, we want to get off that grind at certain points of our day or maybe longer periods during our week. But for you, how do you think work burnout manifests? Like, what does burnout mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, before going into that, I was doing some Googling, and apparently burnout is actually classified as a diagnosable condition by the World Health Organization, which I thought was interesting because it's one of those things that's completely faux pas. You don't mention it, at least at work. But I think for me, like, I think there's a difference between being burnt out and having a tiring long week of work. Like, at least to me, it's different. And some people might use the word burnout like a little bit too loosely. But for me, like, I've definitely been in roles where, you know, I have the entire week where it's just like go, 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 deliverable after deliverable. And, you know, sometimes you're putting in a lot of miles into that project, but I know that it's aligning with where I want to go with my career. And so in the short term, of course, there's like frustrations, like process, personnel blockers that happen all the time. But like, if I take a step back and look more macroly, it's like okay to be going through those loops versus how I see burnout is you're going through the motions, like putting in a ton of time and effort, but those things don't align with like your actual goals of who you want to be as a person or even professionally.
Mm, yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, that resonates with me a lot. I feel like I use burnout like very casually. And then, you know, when you mentioned that, that it's like a diagnosable thing, it made me kind of take a step back because, yeah, like I use it very casually. I use it to kind of convey when I've had a long ass week. But I have felt acute periods of burnout, and it's a lot around what you just described. For me, it comes from, you know, I'm spending a lot of effort that ultimately doesn't go anywhere, or it doesn't move the needle on things that I really care about. So I think that there is, it's really easy to fall into that trap for me because I don't think about what I care about. I've never really reflected about that, mm-hmm. reflected on that. You know, I just kind of do things because there's an expectation to kind of fall into it. Go to college, come out of college, get a job, work hard, progress through the corporate ladder, you know, get promoted, get paid marginally more salary wise, and then keep going. And then there is this kind of, you know, there's this feedback loop of wanting to gain the kind of approval of the people above you, the people who kind of manage your career essentially. And so when you constantly give energy to that, whether it's like some arbitrary construct like being on call or trying to get the approval, the thumbs up emojis in Slack, mm-hmm. I think that it's really, really easy to kind of slip into that cycle where you're devoting a ton of energy and it doesn't affect anything that you really care about. So I think number one for me, it made me think a lot about the importance of having to kind of reflect on that, like reflect on what's important to you.
So I want to ask you a question. There's two scenarios. The first scenario is both scenarios, you're putting in a ton of time and effort, but the first one is you're putting in a ton of time and effort, most likely not going to get promoted, and they don't necessarily align with like the goals that you have for yourself professionally, but you get a lot of props from your manager. They help you kind of unblock the challenges, and people validate like what you're doing, like, oh my God, you're so helpful, blah, blah, blah. And then the second scenario is you put in a lot of work. It's making you take steps towards who you want to be eventually, but your manager or your team, they don't like actually give you any props around it. Like which scenario would you choose?
Man, that's a pretty triggering.
So yeah. Are you a people pleaser or not?
I'm a people pleaser. And I think the way that I think about your question is like short-term and long-term gratification. I think my mental makeup is I'm going to veer more towards getting the approval immediately, the mm-hmm. short-term. And that's why I'm like a Slack monkey. But then if I really think about it, if I think about like longer periods of time, you know, over like the last couple of years, if I try to summarize the moments when I feel really gratified or I feel really burnt out, it's times when I'm kind of chasing that work approval constantly where I feel so burnt out because, again, it's not moving the needle on things that I actually care about. It's mm-hmm. just in the moment, I'm succumbing to that impulse of wanting to get the positive feedback that might suggest that I'm moving forward in a career track where I entered this with the expectation that that's what I should be doing. But there are a lot of latent things that I do care about on a personal level, value-wise, things like this podcast. It's something that's just kind of more for me and something that I'm creating where I can talk shit about stuff that I care about that's like on, you know, that's top of mind for me. And then when, you know, like I meet somebody like you who shares that kind of interest, then it's like extremely gratifying because then there's like two of us. We can talk about stuff that we really care about. But you don't think about those things. You don't think about those things in the moment. When I'm getting pinged by my PM, I'm like, I need to get this done. You know, I need to get this done fast and do it well. And then I can get the props. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's like a little bit of a hamster wheel that feels good in the moment, but then you don't really benefit from kind of the long-term view of like where you're actually going to be happy.
It's a corporate carrot.
Yeah.
Like the times that when you worked at Headspace and you would always tell people like, oh, I'll do this for you, but give me points, like bonusly, yeah. Which basically is kind of like a gift card using points, and you're allotted a certain number of points a month. for your team. And then with those points, you can buy like gift cards. And we have that same system at Samsung too. Yeah. But we're not as like rigid of like, oh, I'm only going to give you this if you gave me like applause points. Or
whatever. You make it sound like I'm like bartering my time.
You guys had a Slack emoji for it. Like, hey, thanks, blah, blah, blah. And you'd like select it like bonusly.
Yeah, I abuse that. Well, I mean, look, I wanted the gift cards. And
you bought a ton of stuff with it.
I bought a ton of stuff. Yeah. Like, I think the conversion, like, because the bonus, it was like a HR perk. And like the bonusly points was like, it was like 10 points for a dollar. So, I mean, I racked up a ton.
Great conversion rate.
Yeah, yeah. We got a lot of gift cards from that. But yeah, I think there is a little bit of that. It's really easy to kind of fall into that cycle. And we don't even realize that, you know, that's the thing that's motivating our kind of behavior. But then in the long run, I think that's what contributes a lot to that feeling of what we think is burnout, not necessarily the scientific definition.
Yeah. Like, do you feel like, in your opinion, millennials they're dealing with burnout a little bit more than maybe other generations? Because like, we kind of grew up in that dot-com era where the harder you work, the more successful you could potentially be. You know, the Googles and Twitters, Instagram, like all of that came up right as we were in college and about to graduate. And we also were in cities, like coastal cities, you in New York, me in like the Bay Area, where a lot of it was around like rise and grind, like hashtag girl boss, like all of that stuff. What do you think in terms of generational stuff?
I think from my experience, some of it is cultural. I think some of it is, you know, we're Asian Americans, and so our parents were immigrants, and they had to grind a fuckload to get to where they are and to survive. I think that there's an element of like, we can easily complain about how hard our jobs are, and they can be very hard, but then when we tell them to our parents, they're going to laugh in our face because they had to endure much harder things to come to a new country, to learn a new language and assimilate, raise their kids. So I think some of it is cultural. Like, I think there is a element of like, just toughen up, you know, toughen up. And so then we think when we are in the grind, you just suck it up and you just do it. And I think there is value in doing that to an extent. Like, we can't always just succumb to our feelings, but I do think that there is like a cultural element to us thinking like, we can just, you know, swallow the pain and just keep chugging along and, you know, keep looking for approval. I think some of the approval seeking also is part of the immigrant experience as well. Like, if you don't speak a language, you're looking for visual and some behavioral cues to understand you're doing the right thing. Like, if you're in a supermarket, you don't speak the language really well and you're trying to like find something, you're looking for these like behavioral cues that'll tell you whether or not you're on the right track. And I think some of that has transferred down to us, even mm-hmm. though we are Americans. That's kind of my point of view on that.
This is not as serious, but there's this trend going on TikTok and YouTube where it's called like corporate millennials. And it's kind of like the SNL skit that I was showing you on YouTube for SNL Korea. So basically in Korea, there's been a changing of the guards or whatever the saying is, but in Korean culture, at least like up until today, there's so many like obligations that you have to do after work. I think Eddie had mentioned it last week, but there's a lot of like hierarchy as well. So when someone senior is talking, you're just kind of nodding your head and agreeing with everything they're saying. But then there's also this thing called 회식 where after work, mm-hmm. if your senior VP is like, hey, like we're all going to grab dinner together, you can't say no, you have to go along with it. And sadly, because a lot of these senior people are super unhappy in their marriage or family or whatnot, they want to just keep the party going with like one round, the first round, second round, like who knows how late things go. But anyway, there's this TikTok trend right now of corporate millennials, and it's basically about people who are born between 1981 through 1996. And it's like this funny take on just toxic relationships that they have with their jobs and like wanting to rage quit. But it's funny because they put you in the middle of other generations. Like Gen X folks, they don't want to know what's on the other side of the fence because they just want to have their blinders on, work hard, just do what they got to do. Ignorance is bliss. And then you have Gen Z on the other side who are like, I don't like my coworker, so I'm not going to do this project. Or like, I need a mental health day. Like, I'm not signing on. super hilarious to see millennials in that. Do you feel like you're in the millennial, like that stereotypical kind of vibe?
I don't know. I'm.
Or are you more boomer?
I'm like a little bit more of a boomer. And so, but I don't think that's like my personality. I do feel like it's cyclical. I think boomers have thought that millennials are soft forever. And I think millennials will look at Gen Z and think, wow, you guys are babies. And I think Gen Z are going to look at, what's the next gen? Is it Gen X? Whatever the next generation.
Alpha.
Yeah. Whatever, you know, the people who grew up on ChatGPT, that they're extra soft as well. I think some of it is cyclical. But like I watched that same SNL Korea short. And yeah, it's hysterical because like we think of Korea from the perspective of when our parents came, which was like 80s, 90s. And like we think of it as this like super, super rigid, hierarchical people just like, you know, bowing to the corporate gods. But then to see that there is like this emergent culture around Gen Z over there and they're just like, fuck it. Like, we want to do what we want to do. I think it's like, it's funny. It's really, I wouldn't say that I would want to do that, but I think there's a little bit of like a liberating feeling to kind of watch that. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like there are times where I'm like, damn, I wish I could just like mic drop and just rage quit and just fuck you, everybody. And like, and just do all that. But I know that I have become a little bit more like my parents in the last couple of years. And I'm sure that's going to continue to be the case.
Yeah. So like kind of thinking about burnout and working backwards, a lot of it has to stem from, yes, like you had mentioned, you know, growing up in a household where your parents are like, the American dream is work hard, you're going to succeed, put in all, you know, as much effort as possible into what you're doing. And there was like that kind of hustle culture that was brewing when we were in college-ish time. Were you bought into that?
I mean, I went to college in New York, so I was like a bleeding heart liberal. I was like, you know, Occupy Wall Street, let's go. And
Occupy Wall Street, I totally remember that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, we would see all these dirty-ass hippies, and I'm like, okay, you know, maybe they got a point.
I saw dirty-ass hippies on trees
at
Berkeley.
Yeah,
well, and they wouldn't Berkeley. Come down. Yeah, it was like a whole thing.
That's where they lived. I didn't buy into it then. But I can see how that time kind of being around 08 when, you know, economically the country was in such a weird place. And also I think it gave birth to a generation of people like us where, yeah, there was legitimate scarcity. And so I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised to know that a lot of at least kind of recent hustle culture came from people who were young adults at that time. Because if you think about people coming out of college then, you know, I have an older brother who was coming out of grad school around that time. You know, a lot of people went back to grad school because the economy was so bad. And so I'm not surprised that there is a little bit of that, hey, you need to kind of dig deep and make your way economically. But then I also think that the emergence of social, you put yourself out there. And if you have mediums like LinkedIn where you can really just like show the depths of your lunacy by how much of a grinder you are, you know, despite coming from nothing and just kind of like putting that out there for like social feedback. I think that exacerbated a little bit of, I think what was already happening naturally because of tough economic times.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say that because for me, I was totally sold. Like drink the Kool-Aid. I'm like corner office, let's go C-suite or nothing.
Who are your favorite entrepreneurs back then?
Well, back then, I don't think I had like, I mean, the girl from, she wrote the book Girl Boss. I forget what her name is, like Sophia something. But I don't think there was like one person I looked up to. I think just anybody that had a startup and made it, I was like, oh my God, I want to be them. Little did I know you have to actually work hard and bootstrap a company. And now I'm like, hell no, I'm totally fine being a corporate slave. But now there's been a lot of documentaries and it's kind of crazy to think that these are now historical documentaries and it's about like Uber and
we lived
Theranos.
Them.
Yeah. I'm like, God, I feel old.
It wasn't even that long ago that they were hot shit. Oh, you're thinking of Sophia Amoroso.
Yes, her. But now when I watch those documentaries, I still have this like fascination around those like psychotic startup founders. I don't know if it's the whole idea of, and that's our dog, like moving the ball machine.
Yeah, he's got a little like automatic ball machine where he drops a tennis ball into it and it shoots out. But then when we're not like playing with him, he just tips it over because he's being a little asshole.
Yeah, but going back to the startup founders, I don't know what it is, but I'm just so fascinated that they were able to get all of that funding on a product that was pretty shitty. They were able to, yeah, I think it's like crazy marketing and like marketing themselves. It's just so fascinating. And I think that type of like kind of scary charisma and being able to just get people, maybe this is why I'm also fascinated by cults.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just that those types of characteristics in people I know aren't things that you should want in yourself, but there's an element of like, wow, so cool. Like I still want to be like them.
It's seductive.
Yeah.
You were seduced by it.
I was actually going through my Notion and this is so cringe, but I literally have a page of motivational quotes and they're all like the Elon Musk vibes of like, you know, there was like that one tweet, there are easier places to work, but no one ever changed the world on 40 hours a week. And I'm like, yes.
You're such a loser.
I know. But even the fact that I had those quotes, I'm like, ew, why did I do that? So intense.
But there is, you know, I don't disagree with that. But it's all kind of about like what you want your life to kind of amount to. And if you're the type of person where at all costs you want to move the world, then, you know, thoughts like that are the ones that are going to drive you. But I think for a lot of people, and that's not to say that like we're trying to achieve lesser things, but like anything, every decision comes with trade-offs. And I think for most people, we look at the Elons, or we looked at, you know, like you did, Elizabeth Holmes, the WeWork guy, and you get kind of seduced by this dream that they sold. It's really easy to build a value system around getting that. But you haven't really thought about what you want. You know, like if you feel really compelled about building something that aligns with what you want to see in the world, then like by all means, work yourself till you're dust. But if you don't know that and you're committing your time and your energy towards climbing some corporate ladder, I would argue that you're probably going to be pretty unhappy. And that's where most of us kind of sit at.
Yeah, I definitely it's not the reality of what I want. And again, I think it's the social media come up where we only see their highlight reel and we're like, oh wow, they're on the Times, you know, cover page, cover magazine. Like I want that. But then I don't see any of the behind the scenes thing. But for me, I feel like when I experience burnout or even just like now being on this path of like, I'm not going to put my heart and soul into my job is it's very different if you're putting all of your time and effort towards your own business, right? Like all of that is going to, in some capacity, pay forward. But when you're just an office worker, like, I mean, we're seeing it today with like layoffs happening left and right. It doesn't matter if you are a star performer. If the company is like, we don't have enough money, then you're out. Like you're just a number to us. And so I think that's kind of, I mean, this feeling has been kind of going on even in the past, but I don't remember exactly when, but I just remember feeling like I will work hard and like do what I need to do, but I'm not going to kill myself over doing certain things because at the end of the day, like it's not my company, it's someone else's.
Yeah. I think your perspective on that, being able to decouple, you know, your work outcomes from kind of like your value system around spending your energy on things that you own, I think most people don't come to that conclusion. I think it's really hard to arrive there from like the day-to-day grind. I think one thing that's really interesting too, right, is like you talk about this past couple of years with the pandemic and people, a lot more people working from home. It's really easy to kind of do the quiet quitting thing. Yeah. But you know this about me. I've gotten really obsessed over the opposite, which is this whole movement called overemployed, where there are people, because they can work remotely and interview remotely, it's really, really easy. It's really easy to kind of disappear in the day because no one sees you. And there is this whole community of people who are getting second, third, fourth jobs. And so,
how do they have the time?
Well, their thesis is like companies take workers for granted So this is evening the playing field. And there's this like, there's this tendency that we have as office workers. Like think about when we used to go into the office still, how much time we spent being busy and kind of using that as a proxy for like productivity, when in fact, like most of it is like fat that you can trim. All those meetings that you go to, do you really need to be in them? Like what decisions are really being made there? Everyone's just looking around at each other in the room trying to get some like confirmation or validate their confirmation bias. So these
that's the whole point of working in a corporate job, right? You have meetings to align on meetings, to align on a bigger meeting, to align on another meeting.
So that you can plan for your next
meeting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so the idea gets cut.
The idea around these overemployed people are like, jobs are income. You can do most of your job with like 25% of the time that you normally spend on it if you were to attend all these like synchronous kind of obligations around like meetings or, you know, all that stuff. And so I think it's really interesting to see kind of like the different ways that communities have started to kind of address this particular issue, especially with the freedom and the leverage of being able to kind of be at your home. I'm not advocating for one or the other. You know, like my parents run a small business, and if I told them that I was taking on a second job because I was like, fuck my employers, they would be pretty appalled. And I know that, you know, to quietly quit as well, there is like, there's probably some moral issues there, right? But at the end of the day, I think it just kind of speaks to this whole like overarching kind of collective feeling that a lot of the working force has. Even though we sit with really cushy jobs, you know, we work white collar jobs, we're not like running from dinosaurs anymore. There's still this feeling of like, we're degrading kind of like our souls. The time that we spend, you know, seeking validation from the people who kind of manage our careers rather than looking at what we care about.
Yeah. So do you want to maybe talk about like how we can set ourselves up for success? No, but how we can get that time back, like maybe some of the rituals. Like if you were to think about your perfect day, ideal days, morning to night, just kind of looking at things that, you know, priorities that make it a good day for you, what would that be?
That's a good question. So my initial feeling is I want to do nothing. I want to just be a sloth. I want to get tacos across the street and just stuff my face and watch The Office. But, you know, I've had periods like that, not like days, but, you know, there are weekends where I just kind of like languish, and I'm going to be honest, afterwards, I feel pretty worthless. And some of that is driven by, you know, the trained impulse of wanting to be, quote, productive. And I hate that word now. But, you know, some of it is, I do feel like intrinsically, I want to get things done. Again, about things that I care about. And I want to feel like I have some structure around getting that stuff done. Because, you know, for me, my impulse is like being a lazy piece of shit. And my desire is I want to get stuff done in areas that I care about, not necessarily my job. So my feeling is like, if I have a really, really good day, I've applied some structure ahead of time so that I can get the things done that I care about. And then I can really enjoy my downtime in a way that I don't feel guilty. And I think like I have a lot of Asian guilt. What about you? What is a perfect day for you?
That's so funny. Maybe this is why they say opposites attract, because literally like sitting at home doing nothing is my worst nightmare. And I did that last Sunday where after church, I just sat in one corner of the couch, binge watched 10 episodes of Selling Sunset, and then continued to watch more shows. And then on Monday, I was like, oh my God, just sew me into the couch. But I think in a way, we can also kind of like learn from each other, because I love, like, my perfect day would be filled with to-dos that I've just accomplished. Starting off, I mean, you know, I have that like crazy morning routine, doing the whole like meditate, quote unquote, not really. Doing my shopping online, being in front of my computer, and then going to like a workout. And then from there, I would go to my massage therapy and get like all the cupping and hot stone stuff done. And then I'd go home. I would deep clean the apartment, just like ceiling to floor. And then from there, after I finished all of those things, I would go to brunch with friends, ideally outside near the water like Malibu. And then I would spend all afternoon talking about goop type of things, like eating shit so that you can look 20 at 90, which, you know what? Like, I'd be down. And then I'd come home because we have this rule, or at least I have this rule, where I only eat out once a day. And then I would head out to some fun venue again with friends and then come home by 12 so that I could redo it all over again.
Are you sure it's 12 or are you sure it's not like 8 p.m. so you can sleep by 9?
Yeah, I do fall asleep at the clubs.
This girl needs like, she just needs a moment of silence and she's just out like a light.
Yeah, but I think the fact that you can enjoy yourself when you don't have a crazy list of things to do, and me being able to stay super regiment, like, we should try to learn from each other and like kind of understand the joys of each. Like, there, I think there is benefit in just like doing nothing. Like, you've even read that book, but I think there's definitely areas where we can just like learn from each other.
Do you think rituals are just structured? Like, do you think that it's this like highly structured, regimented, disciplined thing? Or do you think that there's something kind of deeper about rituals?
In what way?
So like, you talked a little bit about your morning ritual. I don't think you set boundaries for yourself. You're not like, wake up by this time, 1 hour of shopping online, you know, make sure to have coffee. Like, you're not like setting these rules, but is there something around setting up your day in a way that you want it? Like, what is it about your morning ritual that gives you life?
Bruh, I set up the coffee machine at 5:45 and then my alarm at 5:55. So there's a 10-minute gap while the coffee's being made so that there's little time wasted in between the two.
So you just like precision.
I think for me, I mean, okay, so this, the same way that I have good habits of doing certain things and marking off a to-do, the same discipline also goes into like bad habits as well. Mm. Like, I know this about myself, but I'm constantly like negative talking things that I'm doing. Like, oh my God, I could have done this better. This could have been improved, whatever, whatever. And even if I try to like talk myself a ledge and not do it, it's like a habit, like clockwork. So I think my DNA is geared towards just like being in a loop. Like, I could be a robot, you know, just like program something in me, you know, it's the, what is it called? The Henry Ford belt, the conveyor belt.
Oh, the assembly line.
Yes. Is that even related?
I
just meant more like it's automated.
Yeah.
Everything is done.
You don't have to think about it. The overhead of having to plan it is like, it's not there because you've kind of set everything up.
Yeah. It's like I'm autopilot mode in the morning. And it's not because I love to work out. I'm out the door. Like, I think earlier this week, I did not want to go, but like for some reason, my workout clothes were already on and my shoes were on. I'm just like, oh, I'll be back. And I just like went out the door.
That's funny because I had several days this week where I even put it in my calendar. I was ready to go. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm going to continue to sleep. So what is it like? What happens to your day when you don't do your ritual?
So I've definitely been in a rut where I just kind of jump straight into work again because we have no hobbies.
That's
like
my specialty.
Yeah. So let's say, for instance, at least with my job, even if you try to plan it the way you want it to, things just come up. Like, people are asking questions, something breaks, you got to figure something out. And then, you know, when you realize the time, it's like 7 p.m. And so by that point, it's like you didn't get any of the things you wanted done. You're just kind of like in front of your computer, tired. You eat, kind of zone out in front of the computer. I mean, in front of the TV or like your phone, and then it's time to sleep. So by the end of those types of days, I'm just drained and feel like I didn't do anything for me. But on days where I actually have a routine where like even the hour and a half that I have, and I force myself to sleep early so that I can wake up early to do this, I find that it doesn't really matter how late I work because I got everything I needed to do for my mental health, for my priorities out of the way. So it's more liberating.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause like, I know for loosey goosey people like me, the idea of applying this kind of structure is like, it's kind of confining. Like, I'm like, what about the possibilities of what I can get done? But then the reality is like, I end up doing the same things. It's just things I that don't kind of give me energy or don't allow me to walk away from that day feeling like, oh, I had this for myself. And kind of what I'm hearing from you is your morning rituals, which were like a really weird thing for me when we first started dating. Like she would get out of bed.
So precise.
Oh man.
And I calendar everything in.
Oh, and then we have a shared calendar now. And like all, she blocks off time for the most ridiculous things. Like,
don't say bowel movements.
You said it, not me. But, you know, like even things like cleaning the apartment, you know, you'll have like blocked off like an hour for that or 30 minutes to answer this email. There's just like structure that you apply to your day that I find really suffocating. But I see, you know, like as you're talking about it, there is this element of like, we can't rely on ourselves in the moment to choose the right things for what we're gonna feel gratified around. So if left on autopilot, we're just gonna do what is asked of us. But I think for you, what I'm hearing is there's this like reclamation of your day, despite the obligations that you have to other people or your job. And kind of looping this back to the burnout kind of component earlier, I feel most burnt out when I'm giving myself away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say giving your time to people who need it is bad, but within the context of like, we are working professionals where that's a big part of our day. That's where I feel so drained. And I think for you, you seem so lively and it pisses me off. I think in part because of this ritual, because you reclaim big chunks of your day for the things that you want to do.
Yeah, like I was thinking about the number of times I've been burnt out in the past. I could only think of like one or two.
Wow.
Like, because I don't ever see, okay, I'll take that back. Like it is one or two times, but it was when I didn't have any direction in where I wanted to take my career. So I was just like working hard for, I don't even know what. But there was something I wanted to go back to about the being like, basically planning out your mornings. It's kind of like the Steve Jobs analogy of like planning your outfits out so you don't have to think about it. For me, when I wake up and open my eyes, I don't want to have to think on the spot what I need to do for the rest of the day because my work is so up and down and like unpredictable. So if there's any structure I can build into the day of like wake up, drink coffee, do three things and then be out the door to the gym, that to me has already relieved like so much stress already. Even though for maybe certain people that might seem stressful, for me, it's like check, 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 boom, got what I wanted to do out the door.
Yeah, yeah. Although I really hate when people post on LinkedIn around some stupid arbitrary habit of a successful CEO who wakes up at 4 a.m., who meditates 3 hours a day in microdoses, and that's how they started their venture-backed whatever bullshit. It's like when people drink Gatorade and they think they're like Mike, or, you know, this idea that if you follow these habits, you can become like these successful people.
Yeah.
I think instead, though, what you're talking about is like if you dig deeper into the whys of certain rituals of these people, you can form your own.
For sure. And I do feel like surrounding yourselves with people who have those good habits, aka me.
Gross.
But no, there was a coworker who's still a friend of mine, David. I started working with him right when I started Samsung, and I was kind of I knew what I wanted to do, but a little bit directionless. And he would come into work at 9 and would have done like a 2-hour workout, took a shower at Equinox, did all of these calls. And by the time he came to the office at 9, I was like a lazy ass sloth being like, oh, I literally woke up like 30 minutes ago before I came to work. And so I think when you surround yourself with people who operate at that level, you're kind of like, oh, I kind of want to emulate them. And you kind of just like pick it up. But I agree, like, you can't just do the action and think you're going to become something. Like, you need to have your own kind of goals in place to figure out, like, what do you want to become? My favorite word, manifest. Oh. And kind of work towards that.
You're so LA. You're so LA goop. White
Dude,
girl Malibu.
Awesome.
You have a crazy starting. You start your day with a crazy ritual.
Yes, sir.
I feel a lot of kind of resonance and value from that. Tell me about shutting down. So before you do, I'm really, really bad at this. When I'm working, and because we work from home, It's really easy to just kind of stay plugged in. And there are times where if I have like something I've been working on, I'll just keep working on it until like 9, 10, 11 p.m. You're out by then. Like you're just slumbering. Why is this bad? Why, like you always tell me that this is the wrong way to kind of manage my energy. Tell me why it's bad.
So, okay, I'll preface it with the fact that I don't have to be on call. Like my stakeholders are salespeople. So, I mean, they have regular 9 to 5-ish. So like when they're off, I'm kind of off. But the reason why I'm always like, dude, you need to like turn off your computer and just work on it tomorrow is because work can become endless. Like you can make projects for yourself continuously. But again, it kind of goes back to that thing I mentioned. If it's not your own business, what is the point? Like there's always going to be another day for you to finish whatever you need to do, kind of like wrap up at a place that you can pause your work. I mean, I'm also saying this from such a privileged place where, again, don't need to sign on super, super late. Like business will stop. It's a corporate job, not like a startup. So, you know, it's not like hands on deck all the time. But I've just seen with you through both corporate and startup jobs, you can like pour your soul into that role. And then like 2 months after, you're like, I'm burnt out. I'm going to quit. I need to look for a new job. And I'm like, what? Like you literally just started 2 months ago. That's onboarding period, bruh.
How often do you think I say that? So
dude,
we've been together.
So often. When I mentioned it at the top of the podcast, we're like, oh, you know, people who use the word burnt out too loosely. You.
Yes. Yeah, I do use it very loosely. Yeah. I think that's something that I want to adopt a lot more. I'm really, really bad at it. And like some of it is just the programmer life. Like when we spend so much time trying to like solve something that we don't know, once you get some momentum, you want to keep going on it. Right. But I think ultimately if it's your day job, there is a hole that you're trying to fill, you know, what is it like, drop in a bucket. And I think that there was something that, you know, there's this one book that I read, called Deep Work. All of our friends know that I just can't shut the hell up about it. But the premise of the book is it's this one professor, and he got really famous because he did a lot of study around like why we get so distracted and why it's important not to be distracted in order to do quote deep work.
That's
work
so hard now with notifications.
It's super, super hard. Like he's been on this crusade against like email, and now it's Slack, and this whole like concept around how the Slack sound, which triggers me every time. And I think the idea is like we've been trained to think that you can do your job, like your office job, it's all done through like an email thread or a Slack thread. So you have to constantly be paying attention. And when they're unread items, like it pulls on your mind.
Yeah, some, per my email. Per my email, read.
I don't want to read your emails. But you know, because of that, it lingers in your mind and it has all these kind of like insidious effects for the rest of your night, for your next day. And I think it contributes to this like progressive feeling of like malaise. And so his whole thing, aside from this deep work kind of thought, is you need to have a shutdown ritual. And I think this falls in line with kind of like our discussion around rituals in general. Shutdown ritual around your job. And this is especially relevant for people who work at home. It's like, if you have this kind of ritual in order to tell your brain, I'm done for the day from your job, you can free up your attention, which is very, very sticky, and you can reclaim your energy for the rest of your evening. If you have a family, then spending time with your family. I love to cook, so I would love to do more cooking for you. But wow. Sometimes I'm like, I just want to do across the street tacos. And so his recommendation for a shutdown ritual is two things. Number one is at the end of your day, you capture every incomplete task and you write it down. You capture it somehow, right? And this is kind of back to your point around your ritual habits, which is you pre-plan everything so you don't have to think about it again. His recommendation is capture every incomplete task. He calls it, you know, task capture. And that way it doesn't linger on your mind, because there are known kind of studies around this effect where if you have unfinished or uninterrupted tasks, people remember those more. people remember those a lot more than anything else that you did. And so there's this effect that you're trying to curb by putting it down so that you can come back to it the next day. And the second thing that he recommends is something really corny. Like, I think this is like the most cornball thing, but you literally say something to kind of mark that you've shut down. So he says something like shut down complete, which is like, he's like a computer, he's like a computer science professor. So it's like, you can think about how people like that would probably like tell themselves that they're shutting down. It sounds like a robot, but I think even if you were like, you know, we have some Harry Potter fans in our friend group. If you literally say something like mischief managed, and then you're just like done. You tell yourself, you signal to your brain, hey, I'm done with this thing. I'm not going to think about it again. I think you free up yourself for the things that really give you energy and give you life.
Yeah. Like what I started doing was, we have smart plugs. So I, and that's why you see the lights just like go off in our office. So
sometimes I'm just typing in the dark. Suddenly I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. So basically I have the plug shutting our desk connector at 7. And so if I want to turn it back on, and there have definitely been days where, like when I was working on that one project, I would have to manually go and turn the plug on again. So like, that's kind of a trigger of, oh, like computer is telling me I need to just turn off everything and like get out of this room, versus like, okay, you know what? I actually need to finish this up. So I'll turn it back on.
Yeah. And you also kind of shut your phone off, right? Like your work phone, do you go on DND?
So luckily, when I first started at Samsung, I hated the fact that they gave me a separate work phone, because then that just means another device I have to hold on to, whatever. But now looking back, I'm like, I actually love having a separate phone, because if it's at home over the weekend or whatever, I'm not just casually looking at Slack to see like unread channels just to catch up, quote unquote, or have the impulse to go into my work email and look at emails. I mean, I know that's not a luxury for everyone, because a lot of people have a single phone. But what I'm always telling you is, if you can, at least turn off your email notifications, so you're not like seeing a bunch of things coming in, or putting like the do not disturb for certain hours of the day, like at least through 8 a.m. so that you're not getting bombarded by Slacks.
Yeah. No, I think for people who hear that are probably going to scoff about like, oh, that's cute that you can do that. But my job, you know, my boss or my team, they email me at all hours of the night. Kind of bringing it back to the Deep Workbook, an argument that he makes that I find kind of radical is that, you know, most of the time when you get emails that late, or Slacks now, generally speaking, of course, there are exceptions, but generally speaking, it can be solved the next day.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're kind of trained, again, and this kind of goes back to this whole like seeking approval within the workspace, but it's okay to leave some messages unanswered until the following day, because we do have work days. And one kind of study that he cites is, there was like a researcher from Harvard Business School, and they were actually investigating this specific dynamic. Can you, in a high performance environment, unplug for like short periods of time? Will that impact anything? And their hypothesis was obviously like, no, it won't. And the study was really interesting. They took it to BCG, Boston Consulting Group. It's like a really high level consulting company on the level of McKinsey. So they're all like type A crazy people. They have clients, they have to answer to them, you know, very cutthroat environment internally. And so the researcher basically took a team who was willing to participate and had them be unplugged from emails for 1 day a week. So 1 day a week, 1 day out of five.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, 20%. Of course, when they proposed it, the BCG leadership, they freaked out. They thought clients would go nuts. They thought the business would tank. They thought people would just like, you know, bosses kind of have this like expectation that if they're not watching, then employees are just going to like dick around. But, you know, you can tell by my intonation that the results of the study were complete opposite. They were able to produce a better product, this BCG team. They all reported more enjoyment from work. They all reported better communication with each other. And a lot of it was because it was a lot more efficient. So I think like these kinds of stories, anecdotes, studies, whatever you want to call them, I think it kind of gives some meat to this idea that you can challenge yourself to really have like a really clean break from your workday to the rest of your day in the way that you're sort of describing.
Yeah, I actually have a coworker who always blocks off, and it shows out of office from 12 to 1, so like lunchtime. And at first I was like, what, dude? Like, come on. Like, we're cross coast. Like, we need that time, blah, blah, blah. But because he like stood firm on that, I think he had a kid, so he had to like take care of kids. But we just eventually ended up realizing like, okay, don't schedule meetings from 12 to 1 with him because he's just not going to ever join. He's not going to respond to Slacks or emails or whatnot. So it's almost like stand firm to those rules, and then like people will understand like that's how you operate. But I do totally get it. You know, it's a lot easier if you had multiple coworkers kind of adopting similar practices like that, because then it doesn't seem like you're difficult to work with or whatever. But yeah, I think something like that would be like just kind of setting your boundaries.
Yeah, I think just like what your coworker did and how you guys kind of adjusted to their sort of boundaries. I think there's a lot of outcomes that we can individually kind of make happen by doing that. If we preserve our time and preserve our attention. So I think one thing that you just described was time boxing, right? Blocking the calendar. I started actually doing the very same thing. Like, I'll block off time for lunch. I'll also block off time for gym that I don't go to, but people don't disturb me.
Do you also eat lunch when you time box your lunchtime?
People don't bother me. So theoretically, really? I can go have lunch at that time, but I don't have lunch at that time. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, you're affecting behavior around you rather than feeling like you are at the behest of the people who are, you know, kind of asking things from you at your work. And so I think there's this boundary setting that we can be more aggressive about to preserve that energy and attention. So time boxing everything, I think, is one thing that's been really effective. But also being harder to reach. You know, like, talked a little bit about DND.
God, that one's a hard one.
That's a hard one.
I feel like my anxiety kicks in when I see the freaking notifications.
Yeah.
And I purposely removed all sound and desktop notifications from my Outlook and Slack. But I find myself still checking as frequently as, like, I'm just anxious that someone did Slack me, even though there's nothing. So I feel like the harder to reach thing, that's something that I want to challenge myself with. Mm. Like, this kind of, this week as well as the next.
I mean, you're in a position at your job where you're like a resource for so many people. And something I hear you struggle a lot with is people kind of reaching out to you about like simple things that they can find themselves. And you, your job, you do a lot of work documenting the findings that your team kind of comes up with as like a resource. The idea is like you set up these like wikis and then people can help themselves. There's like this self-service thing, but because humans are intrinsically, they're going to go down the path of least resistance. If we answer more, like if you're in that kind of role at your job and you tend to answer immediately, they will rely on you and expect you to be at their beck and call. And I think that there's obviously a balance to be struck. I don't know. But if you can be a little bit harder to reach, let's say you only answer emails like twice a day.
Oh my God.
Let's just say.
People will get pissed.
Well, I mean, they can be pissed all they want, but you know, if you're able to produce in your job is not answering emails. I mean, some people might, that might be their job, but I would guess that for many others who work in an office setting, your job is to like produce some knowledge work, right? Something that you have to think about. It's not like a linear output, the amount of time that you put in. Like sometimes you have to think about a problem for a while and then put it on the paper, whatever that deliverable is. Yeah. That's really your job and the value that you're trying to drive. So can you be harder to reach? Can you make your emails and messages like do more work? So for instance, this deep work author, he does this thing that would like drive me nuts, but he basically kind of called out how people tend to send messages that are like, they're just like one chunk, one piece of the overall ask, right?
My God.
So it takes a lot of round trips to like
give me bullet points. Answer you.
Like, what if you ran into somebody and you wanted to like schedule time with them? Like, if you send an email being like, "Hey, it was so good seeing you. How are you doing?" Like, that requires that person then to respond to me like, "Oh, yeah, I'm doing good. Like, how are you doing? What's up?" And then you kind of have this like back and forth.
Yeah.
Instead, what he advocates for is if you want to send a message to somebody, include everything. Hey, how are you doing? I want to set up time with you. These are the times that I'm available. And then it just requires one more response back and then you're done. So there are these like little lower level tactics that I don't think we even think about because we're worried about like pissing somebody off. Instead, I think we can establish some boundaries by making our messages work more for us, time boxing our calendars. I'm interested to see how far we can take this without losing our jobs.
I'm cracking up because this one individual is coming to my mind on Slack where he does a lot of that where it's like, hey, and then waits for my response. And I've ignored him a couple of times. So there's four messages, different dates. Hey, !! Didn't respond. Because I'm like, tell me what you need and I'll get back to you. Four of those hey's. And I'm like, bro, like, you do you not get it? Like, after four times, maybe just put your entire ask. Or actually, maybe it's not even important where you actually need it like ASAP.
Yeah, that's a good point because I think I've found this a lot with like one-on-ones. Is that when my manager sets up one-on-ones, I tend to ask them fewer questions throughout the week because I know there's like a dedicated time to, you know? And so there is this element, I'm not saying that you need to have like office hours for literally every person who needs to ask you questions, but if you can make some of that like exchange more efficient, then everybody benefits. And something I noticed as well is when I do have those one-on-ones and let's say like in between them, I do have a question and I have the impulse to ask, I can just go find out on my own. Mm-hmm. And so in a way you are helping people kind of be a little bit more self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talk about a ton of stuff like burnout, what it means to us, rituals and like setting up structure for our day, attention and how like we're being pulled into multiple directions. Is there like a challenge that you want to give yourself until the next time we record?
All these things that I just recommended made it sound like I do those things, and I'm probably the worst at them. I give the appearance of trying them, but then in the moment, I just kind of give in to what feels good. I want to try what you kind of do, not your morning ritual because you're like an insane person, but I think pre-planning my day, let's say it's like today it's Saturday. Let's say on Sunday night, I get the Sunday scaries. I want to protect my energy and my time. I feel like recently, especially since yesterday I was on call, I've been devoting too much of my energy towards my job. Jobs are important, but I want to reclaim that energy for myself. I'm going to carve out very kind of really, really discrete blocks in my day the following day on Monday. This is what time I'm going to get up. These are the things I'm going to do. I'm going to have some coffee. There's a book that I'm working through. I'm going to kind of get through a chapter on that. I'm going to set some time aside for me to not think about work and think about things that are important to me. Recently, it's been a lot of like AI stuff. Will I have a job? So those kinds of things I'm going to think about. Make sure I go to the gym when I said that I'm going to go. And I think the biggest challenge for me is the communication aspect, safeguarding, like establishing and respecting those like communication boundaries that I just advocated for. Whether it's after a certain time, I don't respond. I'm only checking Slack at pre-designated times throughout the day that I've scheduled and kind of trying that for not an extended period, but for like a full week. And one thing I find that I don't do that would be helpful is assessing the outcome of that. Cause like we're all going off of feel. Even when we were just talking about burnout, we're like, oh, I feel like there was a time where I felt tired. And rather than that, taking more of like a measurement approach, we don't need to like chart anything, but like just jotting it down somewhere and just being like, hey, this week I did this. You know, I really guarded my time. How did I feel? And just jotting it down, like a couple of sentences. And then kind of using that as information to then like, do I reinforce this behavior or are there different ways that I can try the spirit of what I'm trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. the reclamation of my time and energy? What about you?
Yeah, I think for me, the attention thing kind of stuck out. So, I mean, there are times when I wake up in the morning and the first thing I check is Instagram or messages because I sleep so early.
You got to look at the memes that I send you.
Yeah, like I'll check texts from friends that I've like just put on Do Not Disturb because I sleep at like 9 something, guys. So embarrassing. But people have lives after 9. So I kind of check that. And then I get sucked into it and that slows down my morning routine. So I think this was like something that I was asking you is like, I need to find an app or some sort of software that I can put on my phone that'll block me from using certain apps during certain hours of the day. So like Instagram, even like Gmail, calendar, like some of the messaging ones until it's at least 7 in the morning so that I can spend the mornings reading some articles that I've like saved. I have like so many in my, what is this thing called? Reading list on Chrome that I've been saving. And it's like so long now. I want to kind of just like take a slower approach to the mornings. But I also think I need to figure out a good nighttime routine. Because sometimes I find myself just like in front of Netflix or whatever. And it's so stimulating that I'm just like more. Yeah. And then next thing I know, it's like 11, way past my bedtime. And the next morning, I'm like, I don't want to do the morning routine, or it just like puts me on like a bad mood.
Yeah.
So I need to figure something out for the nighttime. I think it's not sitting in the living room. It's like after dinner, you know, maybe watch one or two shows and then just go straight into the bedroom where like there is a TV there. But I feel like I'm less likely to watch there because it's not as comfortable as like the couch.
Yeah. I mean, environment is supposed to influence the way that you think big time. You know, something that I had read that was really interesting was like the Harry Potter author, J.K. Rowling. I think when she was trying to wrap up the last book, first of all, it was the longest book. And she had so many people kind of banging down her door trying to get her to finish it. So I think she felt like a lot of pressure. But then because she was successful at that point, she had a lot of like IRL obligations, like she had kids and all that stuff. And so one thing that she tried was she shut herself in. This is like the most like rich person thing I've ever heard of. But she shut herself in the Balmoral Castle in Scotland.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And apparently it was like the mindset shift that came with just like displacing yourself and putting yourself in another place that was designated for this kind of activity allowed her to kind of shift into, all right, I'm going to start, you know, writing some more about Harry doing X, Y, and Z. And I think that those are habits that we can kind of apply to not only the rituals, but the things that you're talking about, which is there's this kind of persistent feeling of, oh, I should do this. I should read this. When you were just talking about the reading list, my reading list is so long. My watch later list on YouTube is so long. So many things that like, even from an entertainment standpoint, I've been putting off because I'm doing something else.
Is this a competition? Are you trying to one up me now?
It's not, but I'm going to win. I think just kind of put a bow on this. When you were talking about what challenges, like I don't want to feel like, oh, I should do this. And instead, I'm just going to do this. Mm-hmm. And like, how do we make that happen? And it's some of the stuff that, you know, we just kind of talked about.
Cool. Well, I think that wraps it up for today's episode.
You make this sound like we're signing off a radio show. But yeah, good chat. Good chat, homie.
Good chat.
So a lot of really great ideas that I want to try this week. I'm going to fail at a lot of them. But I want to reclaim my time. I want to reclaim my energy. I want to stop giving in to my worst impulses around just sinking all my time into getting my job's approval.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I think we're constantly on that burnout train. So at least saving time after work or before work to kind of do what we need to do to have that mental clarity for the rest of the day, I think is going to be key. Yeah. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Family and friends, yeah. Or maybe friends, just one listener.
Just yeah.
But yeah, look forward to you guys tuning in the next time we record.
All right, peace out.
See ya.